The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Here for another episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, and our guest will be Mason Cole. Talk to him a little bit about his combine experience and how excited he is to be hopefully gainfully employed by the National Football League. I want to say thank you to Peter Weinert, who reached out to us on Twitter. He was your son Jimmy's coach in Pop Warner, so just expressing his appreciation for the program and the podcast, and so we figured we'd give him a shout-out.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to show some love there. We'll end up talking a little bit later on in the podcast about it, but the men's basketball Big Ten championship, Coach, did you get a chance to watch that, the run from Thursday to Sunday, or how much of it did you see, and how much of it did you love?
I loved it all. The team just playing so well together. The defense, Jack Harbaugh, you gotta like the defense. There can't be a team in college basketball playing better defense right now than
they're so fundamentally sound. But above that, the enthusiasm they play with. I mean, they cover for one another, and I know nothing about that. Not enough to blow up a small balloon. But I mean, they switch off and they balls on the floor. I mean, there are five bodies diving in there for the ball. They go to the rim and it's contested. Every shot's contested. And watch that game against Michigan State. What a beautiful sight that was. I mean, what a beautiful sight that was.
Yeah. I love it. Coach Beilein's done an incredible job. Just the team play so inspired, and you can just see it throughout the game. I mean, the hustle is contagious. And then after the game, the great feeling that they all have for each other. I mean, it's all obvious. And Coach Beilein, we've watched many a game this year. I mean, he's coaching every second, every minute of the game. And
great story, Jim, you have to tell is Al Glick invited you and Jack down on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Beilein came over before the game and reminded you
that they hadn't won since I had sat in those seats one other time, Mr. Glick's seats. And, they had lost the previous game. And we were playing Minnesota at the time, and we were down by like six. And it was about midway through the second half. And we never won a game with you sitting in those seats. Like, oh, God, please win this game. Please. Please, Mo Wagner.
Would you step into the huddle? Guys, Muhammad, the pressure's on me. This is my last. This will be my last shot on those seats.
I'm going with your strategy, though. The only time I'm sitting in Mr. Glick's seats, we got to be
20-point favorites.
We got to be 20-point favorites.
Can you identify a little bit with that feeling where you invite somebody out to a game, you lose, and then maybe they could be the issue? You ever have that thought, Coach?
No, not really. Never had that thought so much. But I know when you're there, you do. When you're the guest,
yeah.
you definitely have that feeling. I've had that feeling at the Minnesota game, and I had a feeling some of my brother's games.
I can imagine.
Tom Crean.
Oh, that. We've had that one.
Tom will get you to, you go to a game, and then he wants you to talk to the team, and then it's like, oh, my God. I mean, they better hopefully win this game. From now on, I'm only talking to the team if they're playing.
Picture this scenario at Minnesota. They're down by six, and Coach Beilein's on the bench. He's got his jacket off and his dress shirt there, yeah. And he's got his hands on his knees, and he looks over to
what
you like,
doing here,
what are you doing here? You're killing my
Every
team.
Every time you come. The team did win that game, though.
It was an overtime.
It was an overtime game.
It's a big-time sweat. Well, I feel like I see, and again, my basketball knowledge is probably even less than yours, Jack, but it seems like a case of one-upsmanship about everybody just getting better, trying harder, because they see everybody else doing it. So you see Mo Wagner, and then in the championship game, John Teske rising to the occasion, right? And Muhammad Ali Abdulrahman playing well, and so the other guards are feeling inspired. And Duncan Robinson shooting the lights out. And it's just it's a great team effort. It's fun to watch, and they're doing it the right way with Michigan men, guys with great attitudes that are selfless, and John Beilein's got them playing their best ball at the end of the year, which is the right time to be doing
it. Where do you think – will they be in Detroit to start off the –
It's a conversation. It seems like they look like they'll be a three seed, but it just depends. You know, part of the conversation is who deserves to be a three seed more or in the Detroit region more, Michigan or Michigan State. And you'd say Michigan State has fewer losses, but Michigan beat Michigan State twice. Michigan has more quality wins. So it just, I mean, they were bantering about it on the radio this morning. So it'll all.
Ira and Sam, were they?
They were, and they were fielding a lot of calls from a lot of excited listeners, people that were really enthused about the how everything went. I mean, I heard one of these guys, I don't even know his name, but he's like yelling, "Hey, man, hey!" You know, like he couldn't be any louder. I mean, they could have turned him down, you know, half volume. He still would have been yelling through the speakers. But there was a lot of excitement. And shoot, I'm right there with him. I'm equally excited. Speaking of excitement, Coach, how excited are you now that we're inching towards spring ball? I know that that's kind of the first day of the calendar in some degree or in some senses. You get a chance to get back out on the field. How juiced up are you?
Oh, very excited. The work that our team's been putting in. It's just it's been fun to watch that, how inspired they've been over the last 5 weeks. And we've got 2.5 more weeks until spring ball starts up. But you know, just can't wait to get back out there on the field and putting on a lot of work. You know, with our playbook, both sides of the ball, and excited to start teaching it, coaching it, and putting it on film. And it's two great days. I mean, there's two great days: the first day of spring practice and the first day of fall training camp. Those might be the two of the favorite days of the year, right there. So we're getting close to it, and we're getting prepared.
There might only be two great days, but I think there are some also other very good days, like the days where you have Jack in there with you, going over film on the whiteboard, talking concepts. How fun has it been to have him here in the winter and early spring just contributing and offering his expertise?
Before Jim answered, contributing? contributing.
In a healthy fashion.
Well, I tell you what I'm doing. I'm watching and enjoying. And I've learned more football, I think, in just a matter of a couple weeks that we've been doing that than I have in a long, long time. I'm really impressed with the dynamic of that offensive room.
Coach, can you set the record straight? He's acting like he didn't contribute anything at all. I mean, how has it been having him in the room as a mind, as somebody to bounce things off of in there?
Fascinating. Always brings you know, great thoughts and coaching ability. That's what we've asked all of our offensive coaches to do these last 6 weeks. I mean, really, really come in with your football knowledge, and you know, we've done a thorough self scout of ourselves over the course of the year. What works, what doesn't, what we do well, what to enhance, and what to get rid of, and you know, how we're going to teach it to our players. But it's been an unbelievable collaboration over the last 6 weeks, and I think it's going to pay big dividends. But it's just been fascinating. I mean, we got Coach Hamilton and now Jim McElwain, Jay Harbaugh has been fantastic. Sharon Moore has been just great. You know, a real star has been Patrick Kugler, who's now a graduate assistant for us. Roy Roundtree has also joined us. Ed Werner has been tremendous. I mean, it's just the you know, like a fist. You know, the group has really come together, and that's what it's going to take. We're circling the wagons offensively to get our offense, you know, up to where our defense is. And it's been boy, every day, you know, 10 hours a day, we're in there grinding, and it's going to pay big dividends, I believe.
No, I haven't been in all those 10 hours, as you know, but I have noticed some real similarities from the way the 70s, being here, and we're in a different room with the defense. But the one thing about the offense is a collaborative experience is what it was. I mean, each and every person having a license to express themselves, and sometimes there would be some conflicts and there would be some emotions displayed in those meetings. But out of that dynamic would come something that was collaborative, and it was the thoughts of that entire room. And I see that. And I know it's going to present great dividends as we move through spring and through the fall.
Holding our own feet to the fire. I mean, as coaches, that's what we're doing, and that's not the most comfortable thing to recognize where you can improve, where you needed to improve, what you did right, what you did wrong. But it's the only way you get better. So You know, I've just, people ask how you're doing. I've never been better. I mean, I'm like dad. I'm having a lot of fun, and you know, can't wait to, you know, keep going, keep the process going, and get on the field with it and teach it to our players.
I thought that I heard earlier today that no one knows how to block a three technique better than Jack Harbaugh. Did I hear that come out of the meeting room today? Do you remember that being said, Jack?
I do recall. I walked in a little late, you know, about 45 minutes late to the meeting, and I was quickly reminded of a philosophy we had always, the isolation play, which is second only to the power play, but we always ran it to a three technique, which was a shade on the offensive guard. And I mentioned that to Jim riding back from a recruiting trip here 3 or 4 weeks ago, just in passing. I just mentioned that, thought it had, you know, gone by the wayside, and reminded me of that. And I think I was the only one in the room that subscribed to that theory. It seemed like others thought it maybe should have been run more to a shade, Jim. Am I correct on that?
I'm with you. I think I'm a fan of running it to both. You know, I think the isolation play is that good of a play. It can be run to the shade, or it can be run to the three tech. Especially if you have a guard like Mike Ueno, you know, he can turn out a three technique and base block a three technique.
And linebacker to take one of those two gaps, and he shows it early so the fullback can light him up. Yeah. I mean that.
And if your fullback is Ben Mason, you might feel pretty good about that.
I don't know if we got time. I got to tell this story. Okay. We were having this discussion, and I'm whispering to Jim. I said, "How's it going with the staff with the running it to the three technique?" He said, "Well, it's just you and me right now." And I said, "Well, we only need the one vote." And that's your vote. And I can remember a meeting with Bo in the staff meeting, and we were at the end of the season, we're trying to decide who would our nominee be for the most valuable player in the Big Ten. And I had David Brown was the safety, and Bo was coaching offense with Dennis Franklin, our two captains. So he said, "We're going to be a democracy here. It's a democracy. Coaching should be a democracy. I want all the offensive and defensive coaches in the meeting. We're going to go around the table, and we're going to vote, and we're going to decide who our most valuable player is going to be." Started on the left side to him, which was the offensive side. "Bo, David Brown, David Brown, David Brown, David Brown, David Brown, David Brown, David Brown." Around the table it goes, "David Brown. Okay, that's it. Dennis Franklin will be our most valuable player."
Everybody gets one vote.
You only needed one vote.
But there's only one vote that matters.
Tell you the other thing before we finish the show, but, you know, a lot of these meetings, and we've had some openings on the offensive side of the ball, and we've interviewed a lot of people, and it's amazing, one, just how many great coaches there are out there, but the amount of football that we've, you know, learned and talked about, and the discussions that it's led to, I mean, there's been a lot of hours devoted to that as well, and I want to thank all the coaches that have come and talked football with us and in all those different capacities. But one, there was a good one yesterday where somebody said to Dad, "You look good. You look like you're in shape." And you said, "Heart attack. Heart attack will do that, right?" And because you had a heart attack 2 years ago, and you're in the best shape I think you've been in 30 years. And Jack Harbaugh came up with one of those quotes that always going to remember. And he goes, I don't remember what he asked you, but you said, "Life's too good to check out too early." was that? Did I get it right?
Exactly. Too much fun to do everything in my power to stick around for a couple more days or months or years or whatever the Lord is willing to grant me. You're exactly right.
Yeah, you seem like you are tracking to really enjoy grandchildren and then perhaps even the great grandchildren that could be on the way.
Life's too good to check out too early.
Just,
can we get that up on the board?
That's going on the board.
Yeah,
that is definitely going on the board.
On the quote board. Just one more thing, Coach. You went down to Dayton about a week and a half ago, and I know that was a really fun experience for you guys. You talk about Mike Kelly or the high school coaches there and just the fun times and the Michigan support and everything like that. How was the trip down there?
It was great. You know, and being with Bill Gundlach, who recruited Dad to Bowling Green, where Dad ended up meeting my mom. And, gosh, you can give Bill – may not be here if it wasn't for Bill Gundlach. You know?
May not. Would not.
But I would not be here. And just to hear the stories, the Bo stories, the Woody stories, and the Doit Perry stories have really become my favorite. We should dedicate a whole show to Doit Perry show. I think he's the most fascinating personality and coach that I've ever heard of.
You're exactly right. But tell, I know we got running out of time. Maybe we can save this for another. But you got to tell the flag story. They're doing a "This Is Your Life," Jim Harbaugh, and it was really well done. It went through Michigan and professional football coaching career, and then about halfway through "This Is Your Life," Jim Harbaugh, a guy in the audience says, "Hold on a second, I have a few things that I want to say." Jim, I turn it over to you.
Mike Kelly, he came up and
former head coach of the Dayton Flyers.
Former head coach of Dayton, and Dayton had had a dominance of 10 straight years or more of beating us at the University of San Diego. So we decided that that we wanted to make a flag. There was a half Dayton, half USD flag, and whoever won the game would get the flag.
You said we decided that.
We did decide that. We did call Coach Kelly in the off season and ran the idea by him, and he said he would get back to us. Well, truth be known, he never did get back to us, so we made the flag. We took that as, okay.
Affirmative.
We took that as the affirmative. We made the flag. And
Going into the 2005 season.
We only put one score on it, which was the 2004 game.
To which he was a little distressed because there were 10 consecutive Dayton wins before the initiation of the flag, correct?
That's right.
So, we made the flag. We played in 2005, and we had the flag there at the game. And after the game, we won the game. And as one of our players had the flag and was running around with it, I believe, and waving it.
On a big PVC pipe, and yeah.
He stuck it in the ground.
Explained to Coach Kelly that we went ahead and made the flag. And we won, so we're going to keep the flag. But his story was really interesting, too. And he's a great guy. His story was that the flag was, you know, really didn't mean much. But then he added the 10 scores. So I guess the flag did mean something. And I'm going to go a little further. His story, Coach Kelly's story was that, he took the flag, he put it in his garage, and used it as a tarp. And it was a big flag.
For oil.
Rake and leaves in the fall. He would rake leaves onto the flag and it was a tarp painted. It was basically this. You got the picture of the flag was just crumpled up and thrown in the ground. Well, when he brought that flag out at the banquet in Dayton, that was a pristine-looking flag, was it not? I mean, there wasn't a drop of oil on that.
You got to picture the scene. He's up going through this, and he's doing a great job, great speaking job, and he's kind of like he's upset about the flag. He was not told about the flag. He said one of Jim's big tackles came out, planted the flag at the 50 as they were shaking hands.
It was an AstroTurf field. The flag was planted.
Welcome Stadium.
And I remember.
Yeah.
When he went through that, and he's trying to explain in the locker room, he said to the player, "What's wrong with this guy, Harbaugh? What's he doing with the flag?" And I'm trying to say, "Well, the flag." And he's doing a great job. So he says, "Open the doors, please." And this 250 people, two doors open up, and two guys come through the door with the flag. And they're walking through the tables, around the room.
Flag lives.
And it was, as Jim said,
not a drop of oil on that flag.
Nor leaves.
No dirt.
No leaves.
Can I keep the flag?
That's what Jim said.
If you don't want the flag, if this is going to be in your garage, I'd really like to have that flag.
And he says,
he was keeping the flag.
One of his players, he had taken it out of his basement. Didn't he say that he had to go to one of his players wanted it? And he told him that he would return it.
I think the fair and right thing to do is bring the flag back, print the scores, get it up to date, and then when Dayton and USD play, they should play for the flag.
We will advocate for that strongly.
Let's do this. Let's call Coach Kelly today and see if he
– Let's see if they can get it back.
See if we can get
Coach Chamberlain and
Coach Lindsey.
Coach Lindsey should see if they can get the flag back in circulation.
So we beat them in 2006, your last year there. We beat them handily, I might add. Then 2007, Coach Carragher wasn't a huge fan of playing for the flag, and the players were kind of more enthused about it than he was. And then Coach Kelly hadn't still acknowledged the existence of the flag. So I sent Coach Harbaugh an email. I said, "Hey, and we're going to play for the flag, but our current head coach isn't too enthused about it, you know, but we're still going to do it. Just wanted to let you know. He said, well, yeah, Dayton might act like they're not interested in it, but trust me, if they win, they'll be the first people over there to get their hands on that flag. And that's exactly what it was. And you couldn't have been more right. So I think that it's a great trophy to play for. I think it's the most awkward rivalry in sports, from San Diego to Ohio, and the league obviously got to travel a far distance. But Dayton and San Diego have been the class of the league for 2 decades.
And who,
now.
Who won the last year? Who won the game?
I believe it was San Diego. They were the PFL champions.
So really, I mean, in all fairness,
it should reside.
Justification, uh-huh. The flag should be back in San Diego. You can't just win the flag
and then keep it.
And just keep it. You can't just win it and keep it. I mean, that's...
Yeah. I mean, make some terms. If you want to have permanent possession, you say, okay, you win the next 3 out of 5 or whatever. But, yeah, it should be infinitum. It should be played
should
for yearly.
Never be permanent.
So,
I mean,
Coach Lindsay, if you're listening, you know, get the flag belongs in San Diego.
23-7.
The flag exists.
We won
Do not let those at Dayton tell you that the flag is not in existence anymore, or in a garage, or they don't know where it is. We saw the flag.
And it looks good,
and it deserves to be in San Diego.
I appreciate
that. I think
that.
That's the bottom line.
That is an impassioned speech, and I just wanted to let people know that this isn't the first time that you had had a rivalry.
As a Torero, you should have.
Of course.
You should have taken the flag at the banquet. And
I wasn't there, but I certainly could have. I would have if I was there. Trust me when I say that. But this was, you know, this.
All right, we got kicked out. What happened? That's right. JT didn't go. He was on his way, and then he didn't.
You kicked me off the plane.
Because Coach Washington and.
I got outvoted. It's like Survivor.
Roy Roundtree.
Roy went back home.
But, yeah, Roy went home. Exactly. So, and they did a great job there, right? And Ed
yes,
Warner.
And Ed Warner.
So, but the rivalry with the state of Ohio, you know, as a player against the Buckeyes, and then Dayton as a coach, and then now again with Ohio State as a coach, it's so I'm invested in the rivalry with the state of Ohio as well. That's all I can say for myself. So, all right, when we come back, we will talk to Mason Cole about his experience at the Combine, and that will be next on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, at PodcastOne.com, and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Back on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and our guest of honor, Mr. 523, number 52 in your hearts, or number one in your hearts, number 52 in your playbook, Mason Cole, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So you're fresh off of your trip to the Combine. You've got a nice-looking haircut. You said you were happy to have it behind you. How did it all go?
Good. I didn't really know what to expect. A lot of people said the Combine was going to be, like, it's a pretty exhausting exhausting 4 days, and it was, but I thought it went well. You know, like I said, it was a tiring 4 days, but it's an unbelievable experience being around NFL coaches really for the first time and being around such great athletes too.
You said that you thought that Coach Harbaugh prepared you well for the atmosphere and the environment and the interviewing and everything. You want to elaborate on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there a lot of the interviews that have teams draw up plays and they teach you plays and they have you remember it and draw it back up after, and there was just a few times where I would almost like hold back laughing because it was like the same exact plays that we ran, like same terminology, and I was almost like holding back laughing. Like this is easy. Like why did everyone say all this stuff is so hard?
Yeah, Coach, what do you think?
Oh, I'm sure that Mason dazzled in the interviews. In fact, I've gotten a lot of people that we know in the league and that type mm-hmm. of thing, you know, rave reviews. Said you were knocking their socks off and all the tests. Mm-hmm. Wunderlich, interviews on field. So, you know, we're super proud of you.
Yeah.
And it was fun to watch you out there competing.
Yep. Appreciate it.
Who's your roommate?
Mark Walton, from running back from the University of Miami.
Good stuff. Meet some good dudes.
Right, yeah. I mean, the cool thing about it is, I mean, you play against a lot of guys, especially in the Big Ten, and even guys from Ohio State, guys from Iowa, and just being around those faces that – and you know their names, but you never met them before, and just being able to talk with them about their experiences and what they had to go through at their colleges and stuff, it was just a really cool experience.
What's it like to have to kind of heat up, do the exercise, cool down, wait for everybody else to go, heat up, do the exercise, cool down? I mean, it's the nervous system just gets taxed kind of on that day when you're actually out there competing, yeah?
Right. I think that's the worst part, especially like you run your 40, your first one, and then you have a 15-minute break. So just trying to stay warm in between that one. And then you do position work, which you're warm the whole time during that. But then we're finished with position work. And we did broad jump and vertical jump, which was a slow process. I mean, those two took 30 minutes. And at the very end, you did like the 20-yard shuttle and the 3-cone drill. And by then, you're starting to feel tight. You're like completely cold. You're tired. But you just got to finish it out.
Nothing like being there, though. I mean, right. Were there about 350 at the combine?
Yeah, something like that.
How many linemen? How many offensive linemen?
I think there was 40 of us.
Okay. And then were they looking at you as a center?
Center guard.
Yeah.
A lot of teams as center, a lot of teams as guard, a lot of teams as both.
Wow. How many centers were there?
There was probably, I'd say, 8 centers. I don't know exactly, but probably around there.
That's terrific.
Mm-hmm. And then the guy from Ohio State had the incomplete pec tear. Were you watching the bench press at all at that point or no?
No, so we were actually they split the O-line group up into two, and I was in the first group and he was in the second group. So I didn't see it, but I had heard about it, and unfortunate. But that's the other thing. You get to the bench and you have like 3, 4, 5 minutes to warm up. Then you go on stage and you're giving it max effort. So it's just trying to train your body to be able to warm up fast and compete under pressure.
That might be the first time that you've been on camera in full spandex. Was there any discomfort there, your full spandex workout attire?
There wasn't a whole lot of discomfort, but I don't think I'll ever do it again.
Ideally. Anything catch you by surprise or shocking? I mean, I know it's kind of your first time there, but I know you were getting interview mm-hmm. questions. Like, people kept asking you, like, does Coach Harbaugh ever freak out or ever lose his mind, you know? And
yeah, in the media, it seemed like all my media questions were about Coach Harbaugh. But I think for the most part is what I kind of expected going into it. Like I said, they wake you up early, keep you up late.
Yeah, sure do.
And I think that's the biggest thing is how you handle the stress, compete when you're tired.
Did you see John Harbaugh?
No, I didn't see him. I didn't see him there. I saw him at the Senior Bowl though. He was on the sidelines.
He'll be here for the pro day. Are you gonna do anything at the pro day? Or?
Yeah, I'll be doing position work on pro day.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So I saw your vertical was 23.5 inches, and I did some rough math. Can you or can you not slam dunk a basketball?
It's been a while. I don't know. I've been able to at times, but I was probably a little lighter then. I think if I could just grip it, if it had a smaller basketball, I think I could. But it's definitely not my specialty.
I gotcha.
So where have you been? Were you out west training?
Yeah, so I was training at a facility called XO's in Carlsbad, California. Yeah.
How was that? I hear so many good things about those training facilities.
It was really good. So we stayed, there's like a residence inn right across the street, so stayed there. So kind of like an apartment, literally right across the street. It's cool being around a bunch of elite athletes. And, you know, we just worked out just with linemen. There was 9 linemen. Uh-huh. And just competing with them. And it's a cool process because everyone gets there and no one really knows each other. But you get close with these guys and as it gets closer to the combine, it kind of starts to set in how real this process is. Because like the first month and a half when you're there, you're kind of living it up. You're in Southern California, just working out, no class or anything. So it's a different time. But then as you get closer and closer to the combine prep, it kind of starts to set in about like, how serious this is.
And a lot of the drills are the combine drills that you're going through?
Yeah, so there was – I'd say half the stuff was like combine specific, and the other half was position specific. Just being a better, more explosive athlete, getting in shape.
Mm-hmm. Probably get to go against a pretty good competition there too, huh?
Yeah. So we had at ours, we had 9 guys, but two of the other real elite guys were Quentin Nelson, left guard from Notre Dame. I've seen
some of his blocks.
Yeah, he's gonna be probably I think a top 10 draft pick. And then Mike McGlinchey, their left tackle, who'd probably be one of the first tackles taken too. Just cool being around the guys that you see online. You see their highlights and stuff, and then being able to train with them and pick their brain.
Probably a lot of mutual respect there amongst the linemen, huh? And you guys all working out together, right?
Yeah, I mean that's a cool thing, especially about playing linemen. Is You're also alike. You know, I've been through the same thing. So playing with these or training with these guys from other schools, like I said, just a really cool experience, just to pick their brain about some stuff they did and about their process.
Are you going to be back here now, Mason, through Pro Day through the 23rd of March?
Yep, so I'll be back here until the draft, actually.
Great.
Yeah.
Get you in our weight room a little bit.
Right, the new one.
What do you think?
I haven't even seen it yet.
We'll take you down there right now after this.
Right.
Yeah. Coach, when you went to the combine, what would you look for in linemen?
Well, you want to talk to the interview was big. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a good opportunity to get them on the board, take them through film of, talk through the plays, talk through the calls, the adjustments, and then watch them. Watch them on the field going through the drills. You got a great look at how they moved, their athleticism. That was the biggest thing you saw. And then just to be near them, look at them and see what their body type was like. When they go through the physicals, you want to find out how healthy they are and any issues, eliminate any kind of medical issues. But, just be around them, a good smart guy. You want to find a lineman that's book smart and street smart. I mean, if they're not smart, they're a good chance they can get a quarterback or a running back killed.
I can only imagine the fact that starting every game here at the University of Michigan for 4 years.
Right.
Having been here with Bo Schembecker back in the 70s, I can't imagine what one, maybe one other one, two other one that was able to do that. Do you have any idea how many started here for 4 years?
No, so I think the only the guy I'm tied with, I forget his name. I'm drawing a blank right now, but I think that's the so guys like Jake Long, they've played I think 50 games. But me and Craig Rowe was the other one that played 51 games as well.
It's amazing,
Craig Rowe from Arizona.
Uh huh.
And then the fact that having played two positions,
right.
Being a left tackle, that we all understand the left tackle position, and then the center position where calls on pass protections and run blocking schemes are all kind of directed through the center position, right?
Right.
I can only imagine being in those meetings how prepared you were for the questions that they might ask or the film study that they might present.
Right. Like Coach said, a lot of them pull up film and want to explain what play you're running, what's happening, some good plays, some bad plays, like why'd this play go bad, what'd you do wrong here? And just being able to, from playing different positions and from playing for Coach Harbaugh and Coach Drevno, being able to explain that and know exactly what happened and know what went wrong or know adjustments we should have made or that we didn't make. It just made it all really easy, just talking football. When you're here with Coach Harbaugh for 3 years like I was, it just becomes like second nature to you.
How many different teams did you visit with in interview?
So pretty much every team, but, there's formals and informals. I had 8 or 9 formal ones, and then all the informal ones, probably every team, honestly, whether it be their assistant O-line coach or head O-line coach. And like I said, all doing the same thing. Just want to pick your brain about football, see what kind of guy you are, and just get to know you.
Did you have any goals when you went into the combine that you had either for the 40 or your bench press or anything? I mean, how'd you hit your marks?
Yeah, so the big thing for me is I wanted to crush the interviews. I knew I was gonna check all the boxes on the field, but I knew they weren't gonna blow anything out of the water. So if I could check all the boxes, like get close as I can to 25 on the bench, run in the 5.2s, do well in the position work, and then if I could crush the interviews. I think that was the biggest part that was going to help me the most.
Awesome. Well, what do you think about our offensive line coming back at Michigan, the guys you played alongside this past year?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I actually saw Ben Bredesen when I was out there for a weekend. He was watching his brother play baseball. And just talking to him about how excited I am to – you play for Michigan for 4 years, and now you're on the other side of it and get to be a fan. And just excited for these guys. And the opportunity they have with Ben, Caesar, Spinellis, Mike, Juwan, Runyon, Chuck. All across the board, these guys are going to compete, and I just can't wait to watch.
Yeah, well, we're expecting.
Ben looks good, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I saw him, really ran good. Into him at Benny's,
uh-huh.
The breakfast place.
Yep.
And I think he's like 320, but he looks.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said last time I saw him, he was like 318, but he didn't look 318.
No,
which
he
is
doesn't.
Good.
Yeah, he looks trim and. Uh-huh. And very much in shape.
You have a favorite team, Mason? NFL team that you watch or follow?
So I was born outside of Chicago.
Okay.
I grew up a Bears fan. My grandparents have season tickets there, so always grew up a Bears fan.
Yeah, well, 1 in 32 chance.
Right.
And that'd be a decent place to start your career, Coach, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, any team would be a decent place to start.
Right.
Like, your favorite team becomes the one that believes in you and drafts you.
And pays your check.
Right.
Yeah.
That becomes your very, very favorite team. I think my dad said it really well. And, in fact, I know our team was one that if we ever found an offensive lineman who started for 4 years and most of the time was they would redshirt and then play start for 4 years. But if anybody started for 4 years at a Power 5 school, I mean, we were drafting them.
Right.
It just became a question of, you know, what round. But it was going to be, you know, it was going to be in the top three or four. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a given. I think the Ravens may be the same way. But Mason's done it without redshirting. He started as a freshman.
Miss a game?
No.
Never missed a game. Now, we're talking about never missed a game.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some days out there, you know, you had to have a little bit here or a little bit there.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, the bell rang and out of the corner you come.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it is.
And at the pro level where there's only 8 or 9 linemen on the team and they're going to dress 7 every game, you know, to know that one of your linemen, I mean, they got to play 16 games.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
One or two of them have got to play 16 games for your – you know, 3 of them, but, you know, to know that somebody's going to answer the bell every single game, every single play, that's huge. That's going to be the biggest thing you could tell.
I mean, right.
The biggest story there is for you, and you're going to be terrific in the multiple positions and everything. I think you're just going to be a phenomenal pro.
Yeah, I think that was in the interviews they asked you, you know, tell me about your college career, like go through it, like freshman to senior year. And that was like one of the proudest things I could say is, freshman year, started all 12 games at left tackle. Sophomore year, started all 12 games all 13 games at left tackle. Junior year, switched to center, started all 13 games there. And the senior year, back to left tackle, started all 13 games there. There's like that proud moment where you can say that. Where you know, a lot of other guys weren't saying that.
You know what, Mason? When you're interviewed like that, you want to kind of draw that out. Let me tell you about my freshman year.
Right.
We're going to take some time on this one.
There was a guy I saw on Twitter who was – you know, congratulating you and really proud for your success, but had said that you basically dominated him, I think, in high school. I don't know if you saw that on social media.
Yeah, I saw that, yep.
Who was that?
It was a defensive lineman from Pinellas Park High School, and he's actually he plays for Oregon now.
Yeah, and so he basically said, like, thank you for dominating me. Like, you embarrassed me, and that made me become a better player. Uh-huh. I thought that was pretty big praise
for
you.
Yeah, pretty cool, yeah.
What teammates or what guys have you gone against, either on our team or others, who have really helped you refine your craft and take your level of play to the next level?
Yeah, so my freshman year here, I played left tackle, and every day I would go against Frank Clark in practice, who's now doing really well for the Seattle Seahawks. And that was the biggest eye-opener for me, was having to go against him every day. You know, he was a fourth or fifth-year senior, I can't remember. I think from there on, just realized that's talent. And be able to beat a guy like that is when you know you're doing something right. And from there on, just trying to work to be that guy.
What do you think about Rashawn and Chase, having to go against them?
Yeah, I mean, even this year, it challenged me incredibly. I mean, Chase is an incredible football player, a high motor. And Rashawn's a lot like Frank Clark, just an explosive football player. And like I said, just excited to watch those guys too.
Well, we're excited to have you back. Hopefully your bye week, you know, works out where you can come out to a game and just welcome you back with wide open arms.
Right.
You know, our house is your house. The weight room, we got to show you that.
Yep.
And I told him, Coach, he's good to keep eating meals here, right? I mean, we can keep feeding him and try and make him as great a prospect as possible so you can do Michigan proud.
Absolutely. And Mo Hurst, you know, lots been said about that. Have you had a chance to talk to Mo?
Yeah, I was actually just downstairs with Mo when I came in the building, and he says he's doing fine. So he had
the same thing,
his freshman year.
And he went through multiple tests and was cleared by multiple doctors.
Right, and the thing about the combine is that they hook up to an EKG in kind of the middle of a room, and your heart might be racing, whatever it might be. I don't know the specifics behind what happened with him, but
with an EKG at the combine, they shut you down.
Right.
And
I think it was just a precautionary thing that just kind of looks looks bigger than it really is in the headlines.
But Mo feels confident that back here.
Yeah, he feels good. I think he's seeing some specialist.
He's going to here and in Cleveland. Exactly.
Right.
Our program knew about it thoroughly ahead of time,
right,
in advance.
And he's been fine here.
Yeah.
He's been through some tough practices here just fine. So.
And he definitely would have dominated, I think, at the
right.
He plans on
doing stuff here, everything here for Pro Day. So he'll be able to show that.
Yeah, and we'll get, I'm sure we'll get even more fanfare and attention paid to it. And
there'll
be more eyes on you, and a rising tide will lift all ships.
Right.
So I guess that's all we have to say about that. So,
well, congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on with us. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Excited about the basketball team?
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool.
Did you get a chance to see the game?
Yeah, I was watching yesterday. Really cool for them to go back-to-back. And I think they were a fifth or fourth seed, and to win the Big Ten again.
Again, back-to-back. I sent John Beilein a text congratulating him on the game, and he sent a text back, Dad. He said, tell your dad that the team is attacking with a passion unknown to mankind.
Wait a minute. Enthusiasm. Where does passion come from?
Passion's working to win the Big Ten.
Right. Maybe we'll change ours.
He did say in his trophy acceptance yesterday that it was all about the team. I mean, verbatim. And the crowd erupted. I was at the game, and it was just loud, raucous. They loved it, and they're playing as good a ball as anyone, so that is great to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on with us, Mace.
Yeah,
we appreciate it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got to talk about one of the show's sponsors, TrueCar, here. If you're looking to buy a car, you are familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? It means that you are going to save money if you shop with TrueCar. Not technically. It stands for manufacturer suggested retail price, but you get where I'm coming from. So there are other terms like list price and dealer price and things that can certainly confuse you if you're not in the car industry or if you're not well-versed in the car buying business. But all you're really looking for is a price that means something to you. That's why you've got TrueCar's True Price. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car that you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. TrueCar dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your own home or on the road if you're using a mobile phone or wherever you're at. Perhaps you're in outer space and you've got really great bandwidth up there. I don't know. But how do you know that your true price is a great price? That's because TrueCar will show you what other people paid for the same car that you want. And your certified dealer from the certified TrueCar dealer network works hard for you. They set the true price competitively so that they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Now it is time for hashtag Jack Talk. And Jack, there's a reason why Ira runs our show every week, and that's because I'm inept and incompetent and unable to do a very good job. I did okay last week, but I cut off about 3 or 4 minutes of some of your best material, and all I can say is I apologize. But I would like for you to bestow your wisdom once again. You had talked about the values of playing football, and a player that you had coached responded with a very touching letter, one of your most cherished possessions. Would you reiterate and tell that story again, please?
You know, the one thing is, you get older at the age that myself and Jackie are now, the games get a little fuzzy. You can't remember sometimes the scores of the games, but you remember how games went. But you never, ever, ever forget the players. I mean, not only do you remember the players, your mom and dad and grandmothers and experiences in school and the fun times when you were around those players. And we went last week, we visited Dayton, Ohio. Jim went down to speak to the Dayton Agonis Club. Bill Gunlock, the man that recruited me, was there. Some of our players, when I coached at Eaton High School, which is just on the west side of Dayton, Ohio, came over for the event. We had players from the east side. I coached at Xenia High School, and some of their players came over and had a chance to visit with them. And a story that I recall is that Bob Davis was a fullback for us at Eaton back in 1964. A very, very good player, a good blocker, good ball carrier, just an outstanding young man. And in those days, we were kind of in the Vince Lombardi era, you know, not two practices a day. We had three practices a day. You practice in the morning, then you'd have a practice in the heat of the day just to acclimate the players to sweat and hard work. And then you'd come back about 6 o'clock at night for another practice. And in between, you'd have some meetings. I mean, it was a grind.
An all-day sucker.
All-day sucker. And players would work harder maybe than they've ever worked in their lives. And And Bob Davis was a part of one of those years in which we had those 3-a-day practices. And then it was in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s. About 1979 or so, I'm coaching here at Michigan, and I get this letter. And the letter is from Bob Davis. And I had lost contact with him a little bit. I knew that he had gone into the service and had served in Vietnam and through that experience, but hadn't talked to him about stories or anything. And it was a beautifully well-written letter, and the gist of it was, Coach, if it hadn't have been for football, if it hadn't have been for my experiences at Eaton High School with football, I would have never survived the Vietnam experience. The 3-a-day practices, you know, when we get up in the morning, you think, oh, my goodness, am I going to be able to do this? And then you lay your head down at night and realize that I made it. You know, whatever they threw at me, I was able to make it through the day. And then another day and another day and another day. And if it hadn't have been for that, I would have never been able to survive in Vietnam. And there were many of our fellow soldiers that didn't survive. And I want to thank you and thank football for what it did for me in my life and how I've grown in my life. Well, fast forward, Bob had a son, Brad. So Brad comes to Western Kentucky University in the 90s, and he's a football player for us, and a long snapper and just a 4-year starter, scholarship player. He's now the head football coach at Eaton High School. Son Brad, head football coach at Eaton High School. And how that's been passed down, 60s, 70s, on down. Now he's a head football coach at the school of which I was a head football coach and coached his father. And I wonder, I ask you, JT, do you think they're having 3-a-day practices, or you think we've mandated ourselves out of those practices?
I don't know, but if Brad Davis is anything like his father and anything like you, they're getting as many practices for as long as they possibly can, and certainly a lot of respect for that. And that's a great story. I didn't know your coaching tree went down that far. But
And the one point I make is, as we went back to Dayton for this event that Jim spoke a week ago, and there were high school coaches there, and there was one coach that back in 1967 or 68 when I coached at Bowling Green State University, he was a player on the other side of the ball against Bowling Green, the University of Dayton football player, Jim Place. He was there, and he was a defensive end, created havoc. I mean, the guy was just a havoc type of player on the defensive side of the ball, disrupting our offensive plays. And then for he and me to sit across the table and be able to discuss 1967 like it happened yesterday is, again, one of those things that only can, for me, be brought back through those football memories.
And you remember some of the outstanding performers or the outstanding performances vividly. You know, I got a chance to talk to Denard Robinson. I saw him this past weekend, and he told me about the game in 2012 when we beat Notre Dame with about 30 seconds left to go and just march him down the field. And he tells the story great, so I'm not even going to try and get into it. But, you know, he was just hyping the guys up in the huddle. And then, you know, we've got Roy Roundtree on the staff who caught the game-winning touchdown. And so we're going to get them to talk a little bit about that and make sure that story gets out there, because that's pretty cool. So it's, I mean, the football memories, like you say, I mean, some of them you can remember as vividly as, you know, clear as day. So,
and again, I talking here too much, most likely, but when you go back to a reunion, you know, in Bowling Green State University, we won a national championship in 1959, undefeated, beat Delaware for the national championship the last game of the season. Players, I'd say 40% of our players are gone, have passed away. And you sit around, you tell the stories. It starts out kind of slow, and pretty soon you start talking about those tight spirals that were thrown down the field, those great over-the-head extension-type catches, those tackles that you made, and the stories just get bigger and bigger. And then we're older, and we forget that we just told that story like 15 minutes before. And everybody looks around like, here it comes again, but no one interrupts. They allow you to tell it. Everybody laughs as if they had heard it for the first time. You're high-fiving. And then I must say, at our age, and then about 15...
How do you think I feel every week with you, Jack? No, I'm kidding.
I can just imagine our audience out there. They're slapping their hips, going,
How do you think we feel?
Yeah, they're like, oh, man, the story again from Eaton with the Davises? No, this is awesome. It's we hear from people, and we don't hear from a ton of people, but the people we do hear from are pretty rabid fans. I was in New York City for the men's basketball tournament. I had somebody come up to me and said, hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm a big fan of the podcast, and you know, you guys are doing great work, and you know, just came over and introduced himself. He was with his wife, and it was a great time, you know, and so to have people say that and to be such big supporters, and specifically of the ideals and the thoughts and the values and the morals that Jack Talk typically touches on, I think is something that I really appreciate.
Well, it's certainly something that I enjoy, and reconnecting with some of the players, you know, the Bob Davises, and being able to tell those stories of quick other player. We had a player at Xenia that was one of the very, very best players that I ever coached, Doug Adams. I think we talked about him, didn't we? Ohio State, I think we did, but he was a 252-pound offensive tackle, linebacker, went on to Ohio State, three-year starters, captain of the Ohio State team, went on to be a dentist, and just a highly successful young man. And just that is what our life now is as a coach. It's those memories, playing memories and coaching memories with those players we played with and coached with. That's what makes our life so fulfilling, along with sharing our family.
And I'm starting to get to enjoy that too. You know, now that I'm, you know, decade removed basically from my playing days, you know, those stories are starting to be fondly remembered, and the training camp stories and the, you know, the different one-on-one competitions or how guys are doing or where they're at, or, you know, I'm on, you know, group threads and text messages and emails with guy, hey, you know, look what this guy's doing, you know, or congratulations to this guy, or, you know, you read the USD magazine and you hear about something, and, you know, it's just all these different things. And it's crazy because you don't think of it back then, but, you know, where people go and what they evolve into, it's just, it's really special. And knowing that you shared the experience of having played with or played for somebody is just, it's, you can't compare it.
And the fun thing is, you're at home about 4 o'clock in the after some day, and the phone rings, and it's not a number you really recognize, and you pick it up. Hello, coach, this is so-and-so down in wherever. And you might remember I played at whatever. And you may not recall, but one day when I was a sophomore, I was ready to quit. The car was loaded up, the gas tank was full, and I was ready to go home. And I was going to come by and say goodbye, and we ran into each other, and you talked me out of leaving. You said this or you said that where I stayed, got my education, met my wife the next year. We had three wonderful children, are all gone to, I mean, it's just, and you think to yourself, I don't remember exactly what I said, but the memory of him sharing that with us and realizing as a coach that we affected lie, not the win losses. They were nice. Don't get me wrong. Championships were nice, but it pales in comparison to the relationship that you have with those young men and women.
And I stopped by your house because you took me to the airport because we're just friends like that, and we got each other Valentine's Day cards. And lo and behold, a former running back was at your house, right? Is that right? Was he a running back?
Jim Bolden, number Jim Bolden. 22, was a defensive corner for us in the 70s when I coached here. And he was in town visiting and calls and comes over, and we have a chance to visit again. Your stories, here they come, and as if we'd heard them for the first time. But that's what this life for us has become, and it's such a nice opportunity, a great opportunity for me personally to be able to have the Jack Talk and be able to share those stories.
Well, I know that was the main contributor to starting this. You know, Coach Jim said, you know, he wanted to share you with the rest of the world. He felt like you were a national treasure. So I don't know what type of precious metal you would be if you were a national treasure, but we'll leave that up to him to decide.
Fool's gold.
Pyrite. No, it's great. Best part of my week for sure. So want to thank you, as always, for your knowledge each and every week, and want to thank Mason Cole for coming on with us. And for Coach Harbaugh taking a little bit of time out of his day, and looking forward to doing this each and every week. We'd like to thank our sponsor, TrueCar. And don't forget, you can tweet questions or any improvements and ideas that you have for the program. We're happy to hear them, happy to have them. Look forward to talking a little bit about March Madness next week.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.